You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. Follow, like, share, subscribe and endorse us via Facebook, Trot the Egging, Twitter, @TrotTheEgging/@JohnHeth, Instagram, @Trot_D_Egg_In, YouTube, Trot the Egging, LinkedIn, John Hetherington, and Spotify, Trot the Egging.
Oh, hi, Si. How have you and the family been, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, bro. Another pre-season just started. We're expecting another one as well. So I've got a son, and we're expecting our second very, very, very soon, probably imminently.
Brilliant, mate.
But now, all good, man.
No wonder you looked that happy that pre-season started. So how does... before we get stuck into it, mate, how does that work? Is it for the latter part? Because you were in... So is it a phased return? Or do you all come back as a group?
Yeah, we all come back as a group. And then, like, obviously, the guys that are on international duty, they don't come in for a while. And then, like I'm currently... I've just had surgery. So I'm injured at the moment. I'm just returning. So I'm on a slightly different program to the rest of the boys. But now everyone came in as a group, and you know, let's just get straight into the work.
Happy days, mate. Happy days. So before we get stuck into your rugby story, Simon, where was home for you as a kid, and who lived at home with you?
I grew up in Joburg, so in Midrand, near Kyle Army Racetrack, and I lived with my parents and my sister. And I went to school in Bryanston Primary when I was about 7 till I was 12, and then after that I went to Pretoria Boys High.
Right, mate. So where does your competitive edge come, considering it's just you and your sister?
Running from me and my dad.
Yeah.
he took me to the gym when I was 10, learning how to do everything properly. And and ever since then, like, it's always been a bit of, like, for a while, obviously, he killed me and everything. And then when I got a bit older, I started to catch up. And like, I think now even we compete still. He still tells me, like, what his training's like and everything. And he's 58, so, but if you saw him, you know, he'd give some of the pro athletes, like, a good go.
Yeah. If I was him, I'd be ringing you now. Do you want to come and have a challenge straight out of an hour?
Probably, yeah.
So what's rugby like as a kid in South Africa, and how was you introduced to rugby?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, play barefoot. No one's got boots until you're about 12. My primary school is very, very English. So in South Africa, like, you're playing, if you're at Afrikaans school, you're playing rugby from when you're 5. Like full contact. And then with me, because I was at an English school, we only started playing rugby. I was about 10. So started playing rugby when I was 10 years old. And I remember, like, we were in quite a low division of like the primary school's rugby. And we like smashed everyone, and then we got to the final, and it was this Afrikaans school, and they absolutely drilled us. They were just bigger than us. They just were so physical.
So it's such early on, you're seeing a big level, a gap level, mate, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean...
And it never put you off, Simon, no?
No, it's because, it's like, in South Africa, it's almost like how football is, that's how rugby is.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows about the Springboks, especially that time when I was growing up from about... In 2007, when I was in high school and we won the World Cup, and then the 09 team, how strong that team was. And you just, like, it's just like an ethos in South Africa that you're surrounded by.
Right. You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Everyone remembers it, man.
Yeah, so it's, I imagine there's inspiration everywhere in characters and, I imagine, pictures on billboards and stuff, mate. So when you go from junior school to high school, or do you have, what's the school set up? Is it junior to high school, mate?
Yeah, it's junior So we go primary school, then we go into high school, and then from high school you go into university. But then like some of the boys just go like, and then you play like a thing called Varsity Cup. And that's like if you, it's like a college, like uni rugby, but yeah. It's got its own like tournament in South Africa. And that's kind of a feeder for some of the clubs, like the provincial rugby, which is like obviously the Sharks, Cheetahs, Lions, Bulls, Stormers, all those guys.
Right. So it's getting a little bit like Buck rugby's getting here. Obviously, the likes of Don Brandt got signed from like uni rugby, didn't he? So it's a similar pathway that's catching on over there, I imagine, mate.
Yeah.
So position-wise, growing up, Si, what would you have been playing?
I played hooker until my very last year in high school, and then I moved to tight end in matric, which is like when you're 18 years old. So high school, you go to until you're 18. But that was the first, yeah, I played hooker all my life until that year.
And how did you find the change?
Yeah, not too bad. Kind of in grade 11, which I was 17, I had a bit of a go at tight end in like a training session. I think the head coach was like, okay, I think that we were going to stick you next year. And I enjoyed it. Like, it was completely different. And I think back in those days as well, we were still doing like touch, pause, engage at school level as well. So,
yeah,
you know, it was a bit different, but it was awesome as well.
Is it, to a certain degree, mate, the principles don't really change because the game's advanced now, like you'll know yourself with the level you're playing. But you were really a cornerstone for your set piece when you're at 1, 2, or 3, that's your main job anyway, isn't it? So suppose not a lot changed for you.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think a lot of people obviously put the pressure, like everyone always says, you know, your number 3 is super important, and number 3 is like the cornerstone of the scrum. But if you don't have a number 2 and number 1 that are very, very decent or, you know, good as well, the number 3, you know, there's not much you can do. You can hold the scrum down, but you're not going to be dominant. You need to have a 2 and a 1 that can also come with you and dominate just as much.
Yeah. No, I hope you weren't like when I played at my local club, like my first team debut, the prop was having to hold me feet. I got done that much. I was like folded up like a deck chair. Oh, yeah, I know, it was dead enjoyable.
It happens to everyone.
it's nice to be nice, I suppose, so thank you. So going through school, how was school for you? Was it, did you treat it as an opportunity to do something, or was it more social?
No, I think like grade 8, so when I was 14, I was kind of like in the lower teams. Everyone else had like gone through all the growth spurts. I was still quite young. You know, you've got the guys that are 14 years old shaving, they've got a full beard. And I was nowhere near that. The guys were just running over people. But then as the years went on, you know, I caught up. I broke my ankle when I was 16 quite badly doing motocross, which I was very, very passionate about. I would have probably had a career in that had I not broken my ankle so badly. And then I was out for like 6 or 7 months with that on crutches. And then 2007 bug bit, and I was just zoned in on rugby. All I wanted to do was just play for first team, for my school's first team. I put all my energy into that. And it took a lot of hard work, obviously, getting back from the ankle break. But, so then I went into grade 11, and I got pneumonia in the trials. So I had to start, they put me in the 10th team. So my school has 10 teams, and I got put into the 10th side. And by the end of the season, I was at seconds. So I made it all the way to second. And then my final year of school, I played the entire season in the first team. So that was quite a big deal for me because, like, yeah, you put everything into it. And I could have just, you know, given up when I said that you're 10th team. I mean, it's hard to go when you, especially in that school when there's 1,500 boys. And you go and you see, like, there's like a lift and you see where your name is, and you guys start at the top, and you start going down, right. And see yourself in the 10th team. It's like, it's tough. It's tough to take.
Yeah, I imagine. So what was rep rugby like as a kid? And did you get any invites to rep rugby? So was there any provincial stuff at certain age groups?
Yeah, like I said, so I missed out when I was from like 16, 17, missed out on those 2 years. When I was 18, yeah. I went through like the Craven Week B side. So it's like the guys that are too old to play Craven Week. I played in that. Didn't get invited to SA schools. I then went to the Sharks Academy and I played under 19 Curry Cup with Stefan Levies, Alan, like our team was actually ridiculous. Stefan Levies, Alan Dell, Max van Dijk. We had a guy called Paul Yodon. Who else was there? Franco Murray. I think Peter Steph played for a little bit. Peter Steph the toy, but then I think he went straight to the under 21s. But it was a ridiculous side, and we did all right in that competition, not as well as we should have with all the talent we had. And then from there, I missed out on SA under 19 or under 20 representation. So, but a lot of my teammates went on to play there, and a lot of them are now like Springboks and stuff that were in that team.
Yeah.
Then I played under 21 Curry Cup and rugby at College Rovers. So College Rovers is basically a feeder for the Sharks. It's like really proper club rugby. Like there's the whole Durban, all the Durban rugby clubs that feed into the Sharks, College Rovers, Collegians. There's a massive rivalry between those two clubs. And if you aren't playing, getting game time at the Sharks, you'll probably be there. I mean, that's how it was when I was there. I don't know how it works now, but it was extreme. I mean, there was a time when like a load of Sharks guys that were playing Super Rugby came down into the College Rovers first team and the rest of them into the Collegians first team, and it was like Super Rugby trials. I was only 20 at that time, so I was playing under 20s, but it was crazy to see like all these guys that you see playing Super Rugby just, you know, playing club rugby.
So you've gone from saying you'll play fly half in the 10th team and then gone through the centres and then and had to find your spot back at Titan. So do you know when you're coming through the levels though, mate, do you notice your own game developing enough to not be overwhelmed and to challenge yourself to keep kicking on?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it all comes down to, you know, your personal, exactly that. Like, it's your personal development. So, you just got to carry on working on getting better at your core role as a player. And then, obviously, the like fitness on top of that, and I think conditioning plays a big role. Looking after yourself, making sure that you know, actually looking after your body as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned that bad ankle injury, mate. So up until you were making the 21 Curry Cup team and stuff, how would injury front been other than that big ankle injury? And how did that happen?
Oh, so when I was 16?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was riding a motocross bike. And I rode quite a lot motocross. I was going to, like, it was also a big passion of mine. And, you know, I just missed the jump and landed like, it's called casing the jump, where you don't make it over the top, you land with like the suspension on the ridge. And yeah, I just shattered my ankle completely. I still got the three screws in now from it. But then after that, I didn't really have any injuries, touch wood. I've been quite blessed to have been quite injury free, but I think...
Like some of the daft niggles, probably like fingers, ankles, and stuff.
I had a stress fracture in my foot in my under 19 year. And then, but up until 21, not really anything.
And so when you do, because 16 development wise, mate, in rugby is pretty, 16 to 18 is quite a serious transition, whether you go to the levels you've gone to or to the, like, even if you just go amateur, it's still yeah, quite a big development age, isn't it, mate? So how was your headspace as a young man at that time?
Yeah, obviously, like, when I got injured, I was quite devastated, because I was like, you know, this is my year to really, like, get into a good groove, hopefully play under 16 A's, and then kick on to the next year. And I was looking to try and play, like, first team 2 years in a row. And then you break your ankle, and then it's like, you know, what do you do? And my dad just said to me, he's like, look, moping around or being sad about it isn't going to fix anything. Why don't you just go and get into the gym? Because you can still gym your upper body. You can still, you know, do something. So I just spent that whole time basically gymming and, you know, focusing on that. And then it did really help, because it kind of took my mind off of, being injured as well.
Yeah. And I guess you knew it was pretty serious straight away, mate, because it weren't a tickle, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is a really big injury, and even the rehab as a young lad, you're not a man yet, are you, mate? It's a big challenge on all fronts, really.
Yeah, I remember the surgeon was quite concerned about, like, the growth plates, because you're only 16, but he did a fantastic job. And yeah, you don't know, you know, like, now I know, like, with my ankle now, I know what the rehab, you know, is. I've got constantly physios around me, but when you're 16, you don't have any of that. So
no, that's it. You're fending for yourself, mate, aren't you?
Mm.
Really. And if you're lucky enough to be a bit wealthy with your family and that, you might be able to go down, like, a good op and rehab route. But if you're not, you're sort of just left to fend.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what age did you start learning the intricacies and dark arts of front row stuff, mate? Because up to a certain age, they'll just let you play because you're still enjoying it, aren't you, and becoming competitive. But I'd say once you're in, probably coming back after that accident off your motocross bike, that's probably when it started kicking in about the dark arts, I imagine, a little bit.
Yeah,
the intricacies.
Yeah. Definitely. Things change and also, like, the other boys around you are also getting bigger.
Yeah.
So, like, scrumming and hooker, completely different. Like you said, it's completely different. And then, obviously, a prop you can get away with when you're at school, being a bit stronger than someone else or being a bit more, bigger or whatever. But then as soon as, like, when it went out to under 19s, it became a completely different game then. Because I played loose head and tight head at under 19 as well. And it was... I just remember, like, there was this massive guy played against the Bulls. He must have weighed 140 kilos. And I remember my back, like, how did Lou said, I just remember my back being, like, bent like this. And I was like, what? This is mental. But that's the only way you learn, you know. You need those big dudes to test you. And then, tight head, the same thing. You've got two, like, really aggressive people coming at you that you didn't have at school level. And these are big boys, you know? So,
So it's like, it's the difference between carrying purposely, but carrying with serious intent, then, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. 100%,
there's a difference
100%.
In it.
Yeah.
And then when it's, so it's just the little things that listeners and viewers might not get, mate, is feet positions.
Yeah.
Binds, where you put your head. Because, like Lou said, you can sort of, we're talking about the dark arts and intricacies.
Yeah,
you're aiming for the sternum, aren't you, to try and pop them out and stuff. And so how did you find the adaptations of both sides of the scrum?
I think at Lucid, you've got a lot more license to, you can go on the angle and not get in such, you won't get found out as much. Like, you get away with a lot more. I think at Lucid, you've got a lot more time to recover. Tight head is really, you've got to be on every time, and you really have to, you can't be last, you have to be first every single time. It's something, and it's something you, when you get it right, it's something you really enjoy and you can feel. at Lucid and at Titan, when you've got someone's number, you really can feel how that feels. But when you just like you're on par and it's like, this is, you have to really dig deep and fight. And I think that's what makes good tight ends valuable, is their ability to almost get themselves out of bad positions, and when the time comes, dominate as well. You know, when it's on, when the team needs it, being able to take that that chance and dominate.
It's also being a bit intelligent early doors in a game to test the line 100%. With the ref as well, isn't it, mate?
100%.
You know, if you can get slightly ahead of the call, that 1% makes a massive difference in the level you're playing.
For sure. And a lot of the time, if you give the ref a reason to be on your side, and you help him by winning and being aggressive, then it makes his job a lot easier. He doesn't have to worry about 50-50s because you're obviously dominant, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I can understand, you know, whenever you're watching, you can see it, and it's whoever's put in it is, and it goes down. Usually the ref just awards it to that side. So, and I understand that because you've got a lot of pressure on them from the commentary and the pundits being like, oh, the game's slow, and you just hear about these guys complaining about the scrums all the time. But it's such an important piece of rugby. You know, if you win the scrum, you normally win the game. So, you know, they can talk all they want about how boring it is. That's what the game's based around.
I know. Yeah, it's vital, mate. There's so much stuff comes off the back of it.
Mm.
So, was rugby league ever an option?
There's not really a big. I don't even know if there's a league team out there, to be honest.
Right. And would that have been something you'd have looked at, or were you very happy in what you were doing on the bike?
Yeah. I think my motocross and my rugby, was pretty happy with that. I don't think I would have ventured into that kind of area. I tried cricket for a bit, but I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the hours, man.
It's a long day, isn't it? Especially if you stood on the boundary, mate, for 7 hours.
Especially if you're a boarder as well. Like I went to boarding school, so on a Saturday, if you play cricket, that's your whole Saturday gone. And you only go home on a Saturday. So, you know, I just swapped it, did water polo in the morning, went home, came back Sunday night.
So how's that for a young man then? How does it go? Is it an easy thing to go and leave your family, mate, or...?
No, it's pretty tough in the beginning, like when you're young, because you're only 13 and you're going to a hostel with these men, 18 years old. The development is, you know, completely different. But it was one of the best things that I did. Teaches you discipline, teaches you how to work with your team, you know, like a team, because all of you guys are there. Like you meet these guys on, you come in there when you're 13 and all of you are, you know, young and alone. And also all of you have just left your parents. And you don't go home for 6 weeks. And then after 6 weeks, you go home for the first weekend. And the weekends are quick. It's only from Saturday, like afternoon, until Sunday, 6 o'clock, you need to be back. So it's really, really short. And it is tough in the beginning. It's really tough the first 2 years. But it's something, like I said, it teaches you discipline. It teaches you teamwork. And just teaches you how to stick things out.
Suppose it's short-term pain for long-term gain, mate, isn't it? If you're looking at the bigger picture, which it's hard to do as a young lad, than it is the immediate. So when did the clubs begin to take notice of you? Was it in that Currie Cup stage and like the higher standard club rugby?
What do you mean, like after the academy and stuff?
Yeah, so when the talks begin to happen when you're in the academy, or are you just, if you're attached to academy, is it up to them to either sign you or release you? Can you seek opportunities when the time comes?
Yeah, so it's a bit different. Like, I don't know if it's not the same as here where you get an academy contract like the Sharks Academy, you can apply to go there. You don't just get, like, it's not just people that get actual contracts. Like, obviously there are people that sign with the union straight out of school, and those are like academy contracts, but you can also go to the academy and study through them, but also play rugby. Whereas like here, I think it's slightly different. You come out of school and you get an ACAD contract, and then you go progress from there. And they try to keep everyone like at the catchment areas and all that stuff. But no, I would have loved to have stayed at the Sharks at that time. But there was great tight ends at that time as well that were still there. So there was, I think, Björn Herbst and Yanni Duplessis, and then they still had like Beast was there. It was a really good side. Bismarck, all the guys we know that were like legends were still there. And then you still had the guys behind them as well, who all became great tight ends and great props. And I was just not ready for that step. And yeah, couldn't compete at the time. So when I got an opportunity to go to the EP Kings, I went. I was only 20, 21. So I think that was a good step. But I also had, because my dad was born in England, I also had that, you know, the British passport in the back of my mind. And as a plan, I always wanted to come over to England to play at some point.
Yeah.
When I went to the Kings and they went under, it kind of forced that my hand a little bit, but it was also a massive, you know, blessing. It's one of these things that like you hated at the time, but it's something that turned out to be a very, very powerful thing and put me where I am now. So, you know, I can't really say that, it was very hard, but it's something that's led me to where I am today.
Yeah, probably made you take an opportunity a bit sooner than you'd like, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You wanted to try and hone your game a little bit, probably, mate, and learn a bit, a few things. No, that's fair enough. So when a new opportunity comes, so we'll start with the Eastern Province Kings first. What's a new environment for you? How do you see it? Are you someone that takes a while to bed in, or are you happy to just go into a new environment?
Yeah, I'm a bit like reserved and a bit shy at first, a bit quiet, but once I get into it, like, you know, I find my feet and then I like make friends and stuff. Once you start making friends, then, you know, it becomes a lot easier. But in the beginning, yeah, I'm like a little bit, I'm just a bit introvert a little bit, but I try my best to, to just put myself out there. But it can be hard coming into a new environment, especially when you're a youngster.
No, that's exactly. You are still you're still a young man now, mate, finding your way, aren't you? So yeah, exactly. on the back of that, mate, did you play at South African Barbarians, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was still in the Sharks Academy, I was playing under 21, and I played a bit of Vodacom Cup rugby, and then that opportunity came, and I think it's because, like I said, I had that British passport. So my agent helped get me the shot, and then, yeah, I was fortunate enough to play at the HSC against John Smith and Saracens on his last game for Saracens. Which was amazing because obviously I went to the same school as him. So that was kind of like a bit weird, but really, really cool.
So was there ever a time as a young man, mate, when you're in these milestones, do you get a time to reflect, or is it always on to the next?
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, it was a big deal at the time, that thing. I mean, it's pretty cool to have done, but I'm pretty much like that. Like, just take it in stride and continue, you know, just press on to the next thing.
Yeah, until I'm my idea, and then you'd have to. So on the back of that, mate, is it like an invitational sort of setup? So do you go into a little bit of a camp, you do a bit of training, get a bit of stash, and then you go through a team run through?
Yeah, it was like we basically flew out from South Africa, landed in England, and then just had a week and then played against Saracens and then back. It was very, very quick.
Right. When you look at the Barbarians now, you look and you think that must be great. That must be like so easy going for everyone. But logistically, must take a toll on your body, that sort of thing, Si.
Yeah, no, like I said, like I would love to play for the real, like the big Barbarian side, like that would be awesome. You know, hopefully one day I'll get another shot at that. But that one with the South African Barbarians, yeah, it was just something new to me. I was just there to like kind of enjoy, you know, the experience and stuff. And it's not really like when you're a youngster, like you just fly and it's all right. You know, nowadays you need to be looking after yourself a bit better, getting the compression stuff on and, you know, all that stuff, get your sleep pills or whatever you need to sleep properly on the plane. But there it was, you know, you just take it in your stride, you're a youngster.
Riding a wave with the bounce back ability when you're a kid, innit? Exactly. Bit harder to get out of bed now.
Yeah, it doesn't happen now, man.
So when you come over, mate, and was there a reach out to any English clubs to see if there was any opportunities, or would you just focus on the bar stuff and come back?
I think there were a couple of clubs looking. I don't know if anything materialized, because like I said at the time, like my agent that I had at the time also wasn't, he was like, look, in his view, the best thing to do would be build your CV in South Africa. When you have a couple of Super Rugby caps and a couple of Curry Cup caps, then the deal would be better to come overseas. So right now, like he said, just like hold off a bit, you know, you're in the shop window, just continue playing. And that was the plan, you know. I had a couple of murmurings when I was at the Kings. Didn't really, they were also like trial stuff. But nothing serious. And then I went to Jersey when the Kings imploded. Basically like two, three months with no pay. And it was pretty dark, man. I remember sitting in my flat that I just like got into, and just like I couldn't afford to pay electricity, and I was just having like a tin of baked beans. And I was like, I can't do this, man. This is ridiculous.
Just started beating your dad in the gym and you're having to do beans on toast.
It's so tough, man. So that's another thing, like, you know, sometimes those things you know you grow from. And then I went to Jersey. So
do you know when that sort of thing happened, mate? Do you know, on the next contract chat you have, do you look for stability more than money? Do you look for length of contract? I imagine so.
Again, like when you're young, you don't really have many like responsibilities or, you know, things going on. Like now I've got kids and a family, so it'll be a lot different to back then. But then I just took the chance. I think it was only a 1-year deal, you know. So it was only a 1-year deal. And then I signed after that another year.
So it's mad, isn't it? Because I was the same before I got to speak to people properly, right, on this, mate. But when you're at that level, don't know why, but we seem to think even when you get released, you'll be fine. You've got loads of money in the bank. You live like a luxury lifestyle. But it's like you said, you were a young man trying to establish yourself and learn what you can along the way. And then that happens, and you're worrying about electric bills, you're worrying about eating. Yeah. It's something we overlook as a fan, isn't it, mate? It's a
100%,
bit...
100%. It's heavy. Man. It's so heavy, man. And that's the thing, like, I feel lucky that I was that young, because the guys that are older had a lot more responsibilities than me.
Yeah, like you said, you had sort of no responsibility, like, no kids, no partner, not like just signed up for the house, but you were on your own, so you can sort of do some work, can't you?
Well, lucky I had a girlfriend, but she came with me, so that's my wife now. So lucky for me,
she stuck around, she liked beans on toast,
exactly.
So before we chat about the Jersey move, mate, what does the Currie Cup mean to South African people? Because it's a big tournament.
It's really, it's like the oldest, I think it's one of the oldest competitions in the world in rugby, in terms of rugby, and it's just such a fierce rivalry, like, between the provinces, like, you know, especially like the Transvaal one, it used to be massive between the Bulls and the Lions, because they're both in Gauteng, and they used to just like, yeah, really, really aggressive. And then it's the same, like the Bulls, if you're a Bulls fan, you hate everyone else, but especially the Lions. And then if you're a Province fan, you hate the Bulls especially as well. So there's like that fierce rivalry. And then, yeah, between the Sharks are kind of like they're the cool guys of the Curry Cup and stuff, and they dominate as well, and they were such a force as well. But no, it was, especially when I was growing up, like throughout the 2000s, like 2000 to 2010, like growing up, it was just awesome. And everyone just like goes crazy for it, you know what I mean? So, and it means a lot to you as a player playing that league.
Yeah, I suppose as well, if you're growing up proper in love with the game, you see what it means to the fans before you feel how it, what it means to you as a player, don't you? You ride 100%. The wave both sides.
Yeah, 100%.
So how were you before a game there, mate? How do you build up to a game that's hotly anticipated like that? Because you come across quite a cool character.
Yeah, definitely. I still get the nerves like before any games. You still get nervous, you know. But not like in a bad way, in a good way. I think if you don't feel nerves, it's maybe time to look at doing something else, because it's going to always be, you know, a bit on edge. And that's good, but now I just try and keep it. I try to keep it the same. I try not like change anything on game day. I just try and do the same thing I do in the week. I might sleep a bit later. If it's a night game, I might try and sleep a bit like way later till like 2 to try and, you know, adjust your day. But now I just try and keep it the same. I like listening to lots of music, and then just like clearing my head, going through whatever I need to do for the game. There's some like key information on like the opposition players that you need to know, or just refreshing that, refreshing the maps, and then just going into it, man.
And are you someone that needs an early involvement, Si? So do you seek a carry or a tackle quite early so you know you're in the game there?
I think that always helps, because you don't want to be there like 10 minutes in, oh, I haven't done anything. I think that's, you know, what that's about. I don't really think about it too much, because I think if you think about it too much, then you start like exactly that, like worrying, okay, I haven't done anything for so long. Sometimes the game just goes like that. You kick off, you don't do anything for 10 minutes. You just scrum or just go from set piece to set piece. But you can't let that be like something you need to do, because I think otherwise it can throw you off.
That shows your development as well, mate, that you're at peace with that. Because you just said yourself, the game can sometimes go that way, and you can overtry, can't you, and overplay a little bit. Start doing things you don't normally do.
Yeah, you have games where you read your stats and you like don't understand what happened. Like, why is there such a low amount of involvements? And then you have like a game where you come off the bench, play 15 minutes, make 10 tackles, and have 17, have like 7 carries, and be like, how's this possible? Like, I just played 80 last week, and I've got the same numbers.
Yeah. No, I can imagine it can be. It's frustrating. You've got to find that balance and peace in yourself to know when the time's right, it'll come, won't it?
100%.
Yeah. So the move to Jersey, mate, was anyone else get back to you, or?
I think it was like a trial. One of the Prem clubs wanted a trial. I can't remember who it was, but it wasn't nothing like stable. I just wanted something where it was going to be like 6 months or, you know, a year. I didn't want to go for like, I know it's like, even that's not really stable, but that seemed like really good, like a year, it's decent, you know. So, yeah, when Jersey came with it, I was first of all, I didn't even know that they played rugby in Jersey at that time. I was like, what the hell, where is Jersey? Because all I thought of was America. I was like, what, New Jersey?
Well, you
what?
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell? So then I Googled it and we found out that I was sitting there. I still remember like sitting there with my parents, like, shit, they play rugby there. It's this tiny little island.
Super zooming.
It's an amazing place, though. With some of the best memories, because me and my girlfriend went over there, and it was just like, it was ridiculous. The beaches in summer was, you know, amazing. But yeah, man, I was there for 1.5 years.
Right. Yeah. So what did you notice about the difference in the way the game was played and the standard, mate?
Well, straight away, I think straight away the scrummaging stood out. Like even right. at the champ level, there's a much bigger focus on it here in terms of set piece, scrum. Like it is in South Africa. I'm not knocking them, but I just know yeah. that here it's more important. There's an emphasis on it. It's a bigger part of the game. There's more importance on it if it goes really well. But having said that, like you look now, I think the South African clubs have adapted because some of their scrums are really, really powerful at the moment. You look at the Sharks, you look at the Stormers. They both have Springbok front rows. So in both of those teams demolish people in the scrum. So I think over the last few years that scrummaging has become more important in South Africa as well. But I think once they realize what was going on over here and in France. But definitely from where I was coming in here, there was a big emphasis on scrums, and especially in the champ. Like, I mean, Jersey is renowned for their scrum.
Yeah. Plus you're playing against like seasoned professionals, aren't you? Yeah. And you're still a young man at this stage. 100%. Yeah. What about the facilities, mate? What was that like?
Yeah, it was a bit of a drop off from what I mean. The Kings was at one of the Football World Cup 2010 facilities. So Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium was and it was amazing. It was incredible. So was the Sharks as well. Incredible facilities. Jersey, wasn't terrible. It just was a lot smaller and a lot less fancy. But I mean, they had weights and squat racks, so that's what you really need.
Yeah, like a little roll back to the old days, mate. Nice and humble. Sometimes what you need though for the reboot, innit?
Yeah, well, they won the champ this year, so maybe they'll upgrade.
Yeah, that will wait and see if you'll pay them a visit.
Yeah,
so now since you've said that, mate, how do you think that should work? Do you think the criteria is fair enough? Because it's sort of semi-ring fenced, isn't it? From champ to
premiership. It's a tough one. I think the sustainability has got to be there. You know what I mean? I think most teams could probably, well, not most teams, but I think most of the top are certainly Ealing, maybe Jersey, could come up for a season. How that would go, how would it look after maybe like four seasons though? You know, I think that's what the real questions are. And they're hard questions because obviously especially in the Premiership and in the Championship, but the product is amazing. The product on field is fantastic. So I don't really understand why it's an issue to sell that and get the investment. That's what we need. I mean, the guys are producing it on the field. So it is a tough one, but I do think like we've got to look after. We can't have clubs going under, you know what I mean? So it's a hard one.
Like a few years ago, London Welsh done it, didn't they? With the yo-yo and didn't recover then, did they? And then obviously lately, sadly, with what's happened with like Worcester Wasps and London Irish.
Yeah, it's really sad, man.
Yeah. So when you're in that league, mate, have you got one eye on earning a Premiership deal? Are you happy finding your feet? Yeah.
That was all I wanted. That's all I wanted was just premiership. I just was focused on that. I'm just getting myself up there. And then, you know, just obviously, that was at the forefront of my mind.
Right. And what was it like playing in the champ with your accent and stuff? Because people will have because the champ are well covered in the rugby papers, mate, aren't they? Yeah. So they'll know you've come over, they'll know your background. Did you ever feel that it put a target on you or...?
No, not really. I think
no.
Luckily for me, when I came, like I said, we come into Jersey and they have a really dominant scrum. I just kind of footed in and just did my job. There was the scrum sessions were long, really long. I remember one time it was must have been like 30 scrums in the rain, in the sleet, and just like being like, what on earth is this? But those
this isn't the dream you sold me.
No, it was. Yeah, it was. I was questioning. I was like, "Where is this the sun?" You know, they said it's like like South France, it's heating sideways. How? That's not what I got told. But now it was, you just got to, I mean, the boys also, like, you know, Sam Lockwood is an incredible lucid, and he was just deploying everyone. And then we had two big locks. We had Will Rollins was on loan from Wasp at that time, Pierce Phillips. And then we had Gary Graham, Nick Haining, and James Freeman. And then Joe Buckle and Jake Woolmore, Mark Thomas were at Lucid, as well as Sam Lockwood. So it was really a really strong pack, and it was just great to be able to slot in with them. And then, you know, we did really well that season, dominated everyone, especially, and the scrum was something that helped us do that. So I was kind of fortunate to be in that position.
Yeah. So when you said you were there for 18 months, mate, was it an hard decision to stick around for that second year, or was you happy?
No, I was happy. Yeah. I think it was, like I said, like, no one, premiership-wise, I'd been there such only a short time. So to extend for another year made sense to me. So I think I was signed from, I was there from January till the end of season. And then I signed on another year. And then I think it was the right thing to do, because it would have been too soon.
Yeah. And without being rude to Jersey, mate, it's a shop window moment, isn't it? A full season. Especially, like you said, when the internationals come round, there is a window for the short-term loan to potentially kick onto a permanent move, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, I think Jersey, you know, people don't like playing there. We played Worcester in pre-season and we beat them. And then we played London Irish and beat them twice. So, you know, they were they always have been a really, really strong side and a tough side to play against.
Yeah. And no, they're very, very capable. And you see that by people that have been signed to play a premiership off the back of them, don't you? Because if they wasn't strong enough, it wouldn't happen, Simon, would it?
100%, yeah.
Yeah. So when did you really feel comfortable there? So when did you feel like you were like an established front rower now? Are you in your groove at this point?
Yeah, definitely. So I think a couple of games in, giving a chance against a couple of the champ sides, doing well, finding my feet, and then just continuing that momentum for the next 16 months or so.
Right. And did you start doing your chip and chases and saying I can play 10 as well, or just stick to the hard stuff?
Yeah, you know, no, I would have got killed if I tried that. Now I was doing grubbers.
Kicking goals in training.
Yeah, exactly. Every prop is a
you missed a zero off me back, mate. So when the Premiership clubs or club call, how does that sort of work? Have you got a clause sort of in your Championship deal that allows you to do that? Was there a common understanding there?
Yeah, I think for me it was like they were never gonna like block anything. I got an opportunity when I was at Jersey to go to Bath for 2 weeks, just to see the facilities and everything like that. And I really wanted to go to Bath. But then, unfortunately, like, some things with being young as well, you don't really understand the negotiations and what goes on behind the scenes with agents and things. All the politics and stuff, and that ended up not happening. And then I went to Worcester as a result of that. You know, but these things, again, they happen as part of the journey. But yeah, I look back and I do wonder, like, what if I could have gone to Bath instead of Worcester, how would that have been? But you know, you can't hold on to those things. I went to Worcester, from Jersey, then I went to Worcester. So
And again, mate, in a new environment, how was it when you first walked in at Worcester?
Yeah, it was good. All the boys were, you know, fantastic. Lots of friendly faces. Obviously, like, I knew a couple of them from the time when I played against Worcester in a preseason match the year before. So that was pretty cool. But then, like, yeah, it was tough because my first year there, I got injured. Like, my second serious injury. I ruptured my groin off the bone in a preseason game. Yeah, it was not good.
I can imagine, mate. Yeah. So what was the movement for that to happen?
It was a weird one. I was at a ruck and a guy ran into my, he ran down like that. And I tried to he kind of pushed me back like that. And my foot just got stuck in the 4G because, Worcester's got that 4G pitch.
Yeah.
So my foot just got stuck and it just, in a funny angle, just popped it right off. So I had to have the bone reattached into my hip with on the groin. And I was off for about 4 months with that, four months and a bit. Yeah.
That have interrupted your day-to-day life, mate, doing anything and everything, isn't it?
It's a really awkward place to injure as well.
Was that pain very instant?
Yeah, that was instant. Pain. I knew something was wrong. I went to stand up and I couldn't stand up on my leg. Something's definitely wrong. And then had all the scans and went in, got that sorted out. But it was incredibly frustrating because you want to put your mark down at a new club. And when things like that happen, it kind of, especially when you're new, it doesn't really help.
And how's the medical care at champ level to premiership level?
Yeah, it's quite a big jump. Prem has got just a lot more resources. It's got a lot more doctors, a lot more surgeons, a lot more connections.
Right, mate. And was the upper, well, it sounds quite a serious one.
Yeah. I had three screws into my hip with a bone because it ripped a piece of the bone off as well. It's probably better that that happened. But then they attached it. And then during my recovery, I also got an infection because of the location. So I had to go on antibiotics then. That also slowed down progress back. So just a really frustrating one.
Yeah. And you're learning again about self-patience. Perseverance, targets again, aren't you, mate? You're probably semi-learning to walk again to a certain degree, aren't you?
Yeah, and just being, like you said, being patient, listening to the figures, and, I tried to push a bit early, and that also just, elongated the recovery. So I know now, just listen to them, they know what they're doing.
Right. And after that, mate, how was the comeback? Was it, a phased return? Would it have been 15, 20 minutes 1 week and then 30 minutes?
And then before you know it, the season's over. So
exactly, I was going to say that. You blink.
Yeah.
Go on, sorry, Simon.
No, they're really good at that. No one will ever force you to play more than you more than you can.
Well, that's another thing. So we just automatically think you're on full pay. They leave you alone. You rehab house you want, but there's still big structures in place and then rehab programs, and you've still got to rock up early, probably earlier, finish later. And you've got to see your mate actually getting involved, and you've got to sit on a bike or a rower or.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of mental, just patience, and that's why it's good to have some of the, if you've got a bunch of injured guys with you, just stick with them and find something to do that's not rugby, maybe not rugby related, build something or work on, study something, anything, but just try and take your mind, when it's time to work, but when it's time to switch off properly, switch off and do something that's going to allow you to keep on going every day and getting better while still being disciplined enough to be look, it's only temporary.
Because the knock-on effect's not just you, it ripples. So it's your wife now, and it's your mum and dad as well, mate, isn't it? And your wife's family and stuff,
And your kids as well. So, you can't be moping around here and then, your little one comes in and you're like, what kind of example are you setting for him?
Yeah. Especially when he wants you to go in there and you can't dive.
Exactly.
So how long was Worcester for, mate?
2 years.
Right. Are you finding a sort of pattern here that the 2 year windows where you're developing that much, people are starting to have a little look at you and stuff?
Yeah, Yeah, I think before the Worcester thing was a bit of a frustrating one for me personally. I didn't really find my feet there. I got a couple of, like, I had a few games where I had really good games, but it just wasn't the right fit for me at the time, or a longer time than that. And that's fine. Like, you go through, you know, teams where someone's, you know, it's just someone's opinion. But luckily, it also put me in the shop window for other teams.
Life's run on opinions, whether you like it or not, as an athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you can obviously do things to improve those opinions, but sometimes you just got to roll with the punches in those, and that was one of those times. But now
it just accept it weren't to be.
Yeah, exactly. But also just it put you in the shop window. And you also just got to believe in yourself, you know? You got to believe in yourself.
I was going to say that,
Sometimes this is going to happen, but if you persevere, then it'll eventually, you will break down that door or whatever it is you're going to do. You will get to your goals, but you have to just carry on persevering and carry on going through with the work.
Yeah, because you don't want to change your game too much, side, do you? Because it's got you where you've got to.
Yeah. No, exactly. You just got to keep on persevering with what you're doing, and you'll get your end goal. You will get there.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like you said. It's life is a matter of opinion, unfortunately. Mm. But thankfully, mate, you've had more good opinions than bad opinions. So I believe in fate, mate. Everything happens for a reason. I just don't think that was for you at that time. But you experienced it. You learned from it, don't you?
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So Quinns, then, mate. Did you understand how big a club Quinns were when you signed?
Yeah, like you always like growing up, I watched the Premiership as well growing up, and you always see that Quinns, Tigers, you know, all the big clubs, and you always think like, yes, maybe one day, how awesome would that be? And I was kind of I remember finding my agent where like he called me and he was like, listen, man, I've got Quinns are interested, Quinns want to sign you. And I was like, shit, are you serious? And he was like, yeah, you know, they want to sign you. They're really interested. What do you want to do? And I said, yeah, man, I would love to sign you. That's awesome. That's unbelievable. And it was massive for me. Like, I think I didn't really take it in. You know, it's kind of like when you, like, you don't realize that, you know, how lucky you are until you, and then when I got there, you know, it was kind of surreal.
Right. And how are negotiations at that level? Are they tricky, mate? Or do you literally just leave it to your agent and then rock up when you need to dot the I's and cross the T's?
Yeah, they are a bit tricky. But if you've got it, like, I'm lucky I've got a really good agent. And, you know, I was blessed with him. He jumped on with me from when I went to Worcester. He became my new agent. And, he's been amazing. So basically you tell him, like, you say, okay, I need this and this, and then he'll go and hook the club and the club talk to him, and then he'll come back.
Yeah. So you said, I want 1 million, and he got you 1.1.
Yes, imagine that, eh? If only football contract.
I know, but some people think it's on it. It is baffling.
Nah, like, you know? Yeah, they don't understand. It's you know, we put our body on the line for a lot of this.
I was going to say, the sacrifice as well is the unforeseen stuff as well. You only see your game there. You don't see your Monday to Friday, did he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
So how tricky is it to trust people, Si, when, like, we're not your motherland sort of thing, are we? So you've come over a young boy with a girlfriend, mate, and you developed into a young man with a fiance, a man with a wife, a family. How is it to trust people? Because I know the sport's a very open sport like that. You don't need to wait long to know that it's very inclusive, and your teammates are extended family, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing about rugby. Like, we've still got friends now that we've made from all of those clubs, you know, still keep in contact with them. So it's really easy. You just, you know, like you said, it's about the sport. We're all inclusive of each other, and every type of person. Like, you can be introverted, extroverted, loud, you know, quiet, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, everyone's included, and and you do, you become, you got, when you go through, when you go through like the games where you're pleading with someone and it's really, really hard, and it's like being in a battle, like you get close with them. And yeah, you just become like family almost.
Can you imagine there's times, like I'll know it just from the amateur, like my amateur level, mate, but you must be somewhere in deep Europe under your sticks, feeling the pressure, the crowds on you, when them early pre-season moments or the few beers you've had bonding get you through them moments, don't they?
100%, 100%. There's nothing better than like when you're standing in a circle and you're about to play like some kind of giant team, like that's got this massive, like, you know, aura about them or whatever, and
yeah,
you're standing in the circle and then you can feel like the nervousness, but then you look up and you see the guys next to you are also there with you. And I think that's one of the best feelings that I get. It's like, I know when we're about to go out to the field, we're all in this together and we've all got each other's backs. And it's not really a feeling, like it's a weird thing that I can't really describe what that feels like, but it really is, it puts you at peace. Like, you know, when you're in a team where you're standing there and you know that everyone's got your back, like, and you've got their back, that's one of the best feelings you can have.
Yeah, because in the team environment, mate, that's what you can get. But say when you're one-on-one with your motorbike and that, it's all about you, isn't it? Because you know your bike and the bike knows you, the little movements, the little leans here, a change of gear there. So is that the nice switch off that you always had? That you could still get that adrenaline, but from a different format?
So what do you mean by that? Say it again.
So is it nice to be able to flip between two sports where it's just an individual sport and then a team sport, but you can still get the same adrenaline and kick? Yeah.
Yeah, I think the bike thing is more like you're really on the edge. Like it's when you're going properly and you're flying through the corners, and that feeling is a different feeling to when you, it's still, like you said, it's still adrenaline, but it's a different kind of adrenaline. Like the one where you in you know, about to kick off, or like as you're walking out the change room onto the field and it's like in Twickenham or something like that. That feeling is a lot more, you're a lot more vulnerable there than you are when you're on the bike. But at the same time, you also know, like, when that big hit comes in and all of your teammates are around you, and you see one of your teammates absolutely kill someone, and you're just like, that feeling is unbelievable.
Because not only do you stick your head in some shitty places on a rugby field, mate, but you're putting your body in vulnerable positions on a bike, aren't you? Only takes a slight overlean and that wobble's going to come, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And what have clubs been like regarding a bike and that? Are they pretty good with your self-interest?
I think like as long as like I haven't ridden a bike for a few years, but like properly.
Okay.
Because I think there are things where I think if you get it wrong and you're doing something that's not really safe, like it's
official to you or them, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you're deliberately putting yourself in harm's way, you know, it can be an issue. And I agree with that because
you wouldn't know.
You shouldn't. Right. But no, it's something I enjoy. Yeah. I would like to do a game one day, but I'll do it on a social level, not anything crazy like you used to.
Yeah. And I suppose with them injuries you've had as well, mate, you'd appreciate what a layoff can do to you.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Would you ever have imagined how successful you'd have been at Quinns, mate, looking at what you've done?
Nah. And I still think, like, I've got things that I want to do, so... But I do think, like, it's been amazing. It's been incredible. And I'm very fortunate to have been given this opportunity. And I love it here. I do love it here. I really, really do.
Yeah. So I know the cliche handbooks that you get when it's a week of a big final. You just go, oh, it's just another game. And we treat it like any. You can't see them. That it's a different feel, isn't it? The week building up. So talk us through what a week building up to a Premiership final looks like for you, mate.
Yeah, the training is just you know, pretty much the same. We try to keep it the same. It's exactly like what you said. I try to keep it the same. I remember it was really, really competitive that game, especially before the Bristol game. I didn't play, but it was so competitive training. I remember like the scrum sessions was awesome. The training was just, you know, really crisp. And you just had a feeling, you just had that feeling of it's going to happen. It's just a feeling. And, you know, and then 2 years, and then like not last season, the season before, we got to the semis again. And, you know, it was tough to go to, you know, it was tough to go to series, but I didn't think we were going to lose that game either. And unfortunately we came short, but, you know, we still got that hunger in us. So hopefully this season we can get back to where we need to be.
Yeah. So did you get many of them feelings, mate? Because it is something I was going to ask you, and I know I didn't send it yet. Like, yeah. A moment in a game where you just look around and think you can't do no wrong.
Yeah, there was a few in that season. And it was also insane to watch, like, just what was happening, like, what the boys were doing. Like, I remember there was a game we played against Exeter, and even 2 seasons ago, we played against Exeter, and it's in the rain, and it's like we're the last player of the game. And we're playing, and I just remember Marcus kick a cross kick to Andre, and Andre just sliding in, and we won. And then he slotted the conversion as well. And it's like all of this magic. It's just magic.
Because when you're on it, you're virtually unplayable, aren't you?
Yeah. And that's what it's incredible to see. But we just need to be a bit more consistent.
Yeah. And that's the thing with rugby union, isn't it? Though especially when you're at a club like yous, you can become depleted instantly. Without being rude to like, because that's what your squad's for, isn't it? I'm not being rude to anyone, mate, but at a time could probably lose 10 players.
Yeah, for sure.
Through 100%. Ball ups and stuff, can't you?
No, definitely. But that is why you need to have good depth. And I think.
Yeah, and it's about managing it as well, mate, isn't it? Keeping everybody happy at the right times.
But it's like that for all the clubs, to be fair. I mean, even some of the, you know, Newcastle's got a whole lot of players that go as well. So I think that everyone feels that pressure. I think it's just the clubs that ride that out the best in that time that'll come out on top. They win the clubs that win the important games when they have full strength. And the clubs that win the games when they are at half strength that they potentially should lose are the ones that are going to come out on top.
Yeah, they tend, whoever manages that autumn and like around the February, March, springtime tends to be in and around the top six, don't they, when it matters?
Yeah, exactly.
So as we're touching on call-ups and stuff, mate, you were invited to an extended training on squad, weren't you? And what did that mean for you? Was it a nice opportunity to go and see what the next level's like?
When I made that squad, it was, you know, incredible, and I was really, really happy. But again, I just wanted to, I also understood that it's a step in the right direction. You know, it's not like you've made the squad, it's like, yeah, that's cool, but, you know, you want to always push on further than that. The intensity was way, way more intense. It was definitely a step up. And I remember just feeling my body like, it's really intense, man. It's like hot session in the morning, session midday, session at evening. Then you've got all the meetings in between. But it's not like a lot of meetings or like a long meetings. They're like quite short. But the intensity and the detail is a step up from Premiership. But it was amazing. I think I had two mini camps at the end of, I think it was 2020. But hopefully, you know, all being equal, I can get back there.
That's it, mate. Because I imagine it's not so much the body and the ability, it's the mind that needs to adapt to that level. because everything's intense. There is no let off, I imagine, mate.
Yeah, it is. It's a step up. But like I said, once you've gone there, you also want to go there again and go there again and hopefully kick on from there. You don't want to just go to a camp and not get back in there. So, you know, hopefully just, you know, get back in there, do my job and get another look in.
And have a go, mate, definitely. So some of the big standout moments for you so far from your spell at Quinn's?
I think when I was in 2020, we played against Exeter at home, and it was Mark Lambert's 250th game at the for Quinn's at the Stoop, and we beat them at home. That was a massive win. That was an incredible highlight. And then there's been a few where there's like big games where, like the London Irish, this last season just gone past, we were playing against London Irish at home and we were losing 23-21 with no more time on the clock, and there was a scrum. We had to win the scrum. We got a penalty from the scrum. We kicked it to the corner and then we scored a try to win the game. That was also one of the biggest moments, the biggest ones. Great game to be a part of that one.
That's what we were talking about before, about the importance of a scrum, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's when you're blowing out your ass as well, isn't it? And you've still pulled it out the back. Yeah.
100%. But I think those two definitely stand out. And then obviously winning it, you know, winning the Prem, that was incredible. Being a part of that team that year was mental. Even though I didn't play as well, I was still sick to win, you know, just to lift the trophy and see what the boys did. Because that was also a mental final. Like, we had gone through it the week before with the boys, coming back from like 28-0 down or 28-5 and then winning. And the same thing with that game. It was like, I think the end score was like 42-45. Like, it was anyone's game. But that was, we've had a couple of these games where you just look back and you're like, wow, what happened there?
I don't know what happened.
But that's why it's a great club to be a part of.
Yeah. And what are them big European nights or days like, mate? Is that, again, a different type of level? Because they're more attritional, aren't they, the European games?
Yeah.
The French like to go set piece, don't they? And they want to tough you out, really.
Yeah, well, we played against Montpellier away two seasons ago as well, and that was also tough, man. Just the heat, and it's a different stadium, it's a different crowd. They're really loud, and they're always like, they've got crazy supporters. But it's the best kind of crazy, and it's a hard game. It's a different game. Yeah, they want to, but they also have lethal backs, like.
They can play, mate. Yeah.
Then they got like athletes, like guys that are rapid. So they're probably not as fit overall, but they have game breakers and they have big packs that want to just go, you know, bash you up. So they're the tough games, but they're also the games you want to play.
Yeah, and obviously with you coming back from an op, mate, what are your personal and collective goals this coming season, mate?
Yeah, I just want to get my leg right, get back to, you know, my form where I know it can be, and hopefully get in another look in at see where I can kick on to, and get another look in at the international setup. Just push as hard as I can and see where it goes.
Yeah, right. I've got a few daft questions for you, if that's all right, mate. So, any pre-match superstitions?
Nah. I still clear of that stuff, but because, like I said, it's the same thing as like the early hit. You know, you don't do it right. Like some guys have some crazy stuff. Like they have to put on their one boot first, or if they put on the other boot first. And like I did, I think
strapping last season, and stuff.
Yeah, strapping. Like last season, I think I was wearing the same underpants, like oddballs. I was wearing oddballs underpants. And then one game, I didn't wear them. And I forgot that I didn't wear them. So I was like, well, thank goodness I don't have a superstition, because that would have been terrible. That would have really stuffed my mind up.
So toughest player you played with and against, but the definition of toughest is different for everybody, Si. So we all have a different ideology of what that word means.
Yeah. So toughest player ever played with, there's a few of them. Sam Lewis at Worcester was an absolute beast. It was just took a lot of him, and he could just take a hammering. But then you got, like, I think Will Evans. He's also one of the toughest guys. He just plays on through crazy. I think he did, like, he broke his thumb or something and, like, just strapped it and carried on playing. So I'd say, like, toughest guy I ever played with, I'd say, that's probably Webb, Will Evans. Guy's tough, man.
Yeah, but that, especially like breakdown work he does as well. To be able to play with like digit injuries, should we say, tricky, innit?
Yeah, very tricky.
So, your favourite away ground?
In the Prem or in general?
General.
The Racing Metro's
that's a mad arena. Place that, isn't it? Yeah, I've only seen it on the telly, but it's mad.
It's sick. It's so sick. La Defense Arena, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the fake pitch before. What do you think of them? Do you like them, or are you a bit untrue?
They're not great, but at the same time, they're not the worst. You know, it's a bit of a, you know, the grass, as long as they water them, then you don't get grass burns. But it's terrible if they don't water them. You can get some very bad, like we're doing Worcester, preseason in Worcester when I signed there, and they didn't water the pitch beforehand, and I slid. I did like a slide tackle. We were doing, I think it was like football or something. Or like I slid and presented the ball or something, but I did the whole top of my shin was just completely off. It was terrible, bro. Honestly, I still got a scar now. It was like that big and like that wide and just blood everywhere, sticking. The worst thing is that night it sticks to your bed sheets.
I was going to say that. That's the stuff people overlook, innit? Yeah.
But if they water them, it's not too bad, you know? I prefer grass, but the best are like Deso pitches.
Yeah. Because the ball's a wicked bounce, isn't it, mate? I know you shouldn't let a ball bounce, but it's a wicked bounce off a 4G, isn't it?
Yeah,
it can embarrass you a little bit.
Yeah.
Right, so if you could go back and tell a younger you something, what would it be?
I'd just say keep doing exactly what you're doing. It'll work out. Like, stick to the process. Don't get bored of it. Yeah. Be patient. I think patience, you need to be patient. Like, that's it. Like, a lot of young guys, it's hard as well. Like, when you're coming up and you see guys that are your age getting the big deals and getting the breaks early, and you're thinking, like, why are they getting it so early? Why is it not me? But you really, all you need to do is just be persevere and it will come.
Yeah. Especially because, like, Rugby Pass do a good job of showing you what school rugby's like now, don't they?
Yeah.
So you sort of see what the level is. And you, like, we all know ourselves, when you see someone at a level, you think there are like levels, aren't they? If you're here and you can see that, you know what you've got to work to, or you just know you might not get there. Like, patience is good, but like, you've got to be honest with your patients as well, haven't you? I mean, you don't know what you're worth.
Yeah, 100%. But at least try to get there. Like, you might not get there, but at least
try. No, yeah, give it a go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so you've had a few beers, mate, and you're out with the lads, and the microphone ends up in your hand on the karaoke. What are you going to give us?
This is the kind of thing that I'm really bad at. Like, the worst. I think I'm probably just like, sing Sweet Caroline and get booed and get it over with.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Get people to join in and disappear in the background.
Yeah. I know, but if like, people always go for like the cliche ones, Wonderwall, or Sweet Caroline, or, yeah, I just go for something like that, man. Nothing too crazy.
I'm the same. If I'm not pissed, mate, you're not getting me on the microphone, so I know what I'm saying.
You've been listening to Trot the Eggin. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter @TrotTheEggin and Instagram @Trot_the_egg_in.